This is Ken Kreitzer with CBSI Talking Business, coming to you today from the headquarters of CBSI Services in Harrison, New York. And CBSI, founded in 1972, provides a full range of special benefit services to the consumer financial services field. Every day, CBSI programs provide warranty, extension, premium services to customers of major credit card, debit, and checking accounts. And today, we are very pleased to talk with Jason Steele, who is the founder of the CardCon Expo conference coming up, a conference for credit and credit card media, and a journalist covering the field of payments, credit cards, and the card business. Jason, great to have you with us today.
Great to be here, Ken.
Jason, if you would, maybe tell us a little bit about how you got into the field of journalism covering the credit card base. I know you're a graduate of the University of Delaware. How did it start up for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I studied history at the University of Delaware, which naturally leads to a career in computers, which is what I started doing in the mid-90s when that was the thing to do. But then as the years went by, I eventually found myself in a job where I was kind of bored, and I was writing a blog about personal finance and maybe some travel ideas that I had, and to my great surprise, it seemed like nobody read my blog. And what I did one day is I went out and looked to see if someone would pay me to write for their blog, which seems kind of silly in retrospect, but it actually worked. There were plenty of sites out there that wanted content related to travel and personal finance, and that's kind of where my passion was. And that was about 10 years ago, and it took a couple years, but I eventually found my niche in credit and credit cards, both because I seemed to have some natural skills in that area and I enjoyed it, but also because there was just a lot of demand for content in those areas. So within a couple years, probably around 2010, 2011, I became known as a credit card expert. And then once that happened, outlets started reaching out to me to see if I would be willing to write for them. And it wasn't too long, around 2011, that I began doing this full-time. And so since 2011, I've been a full-time personal finance writer, writing almost exclusively online about mostly credit cards, but also, of course, consumer credit. And I, you know, frankly, just have a lot of fun with it. I get to write for great outlets. I mean, one of the outlets I write for is The Points Guy, and, you know, he's pretty well-known celebrity. And, yeah, Brian, and he's a great guy, and I love contributing to his site and all the others I write for. So it's been a great career so far. It's hard to believe it's been 10 years.
Well, you found a very important niche. The credit card business is really a fundamental business for American commerce, and it has been, you know, really since the 1960s, and now with the advent of mobile and the growth of e-commerce, it's just still fundamental. What are some of the key trends that you have seen in the card business this year? We have consolidation in the industry to a number of key players in the field, but e-commerce and mobile are still really growing how customers communicate with their financial institutions.
Well, you know, this year I've seen a lot of new products entering the market. From smaller issuers like the PenFed Pathfinder card earlier this year, to major issuers like Chase coming out with the new Southwest card, Capital One just revised their Saver card, Barclays with their Arrival Premier, and so forth. So if you look at the bulk of the offerings, the trend to me that emerges is maybe they're retreating a little bit from the ultra-premium cards, the $450 annual fee and up cards, and trying to find that middle ground. You know, the new Southwest card was $150 annual fee. There's been some more no annual fee cards. But I think the general public is waking up to all the great offerings out there, and the card issuers are trying to satisfy those offerings. I don't see the consolidation, you know, and I'm always comparing it to travel since I have my foot in both fields. It's not like the airline industry where, you know, half the major airlines have merged with the other half. You know, certainly we haven't seen, any of the top 10 major credit card issuers merge with one of their competitors. So it remains an intensely competitive field, which is really great for consumers. You know, there's no shortage of credit cards, that you can apply for. You know, I like to compare that to other fields, you know, like travel. If you want to, you know, fly from one city to another. You'll be lucky if you have two or three airlines, and you might only have one on some routes. If you want a new cable company or internet company, you might only have one or two choices. So it's great that we can choose from dozens of card issuers, each one with dozens of products maybe.
Absolutely.
Far as mobile goes, I'm a little bit of a pessimist on mobile, you know, because we've been hearing about it for years. Penetration rates, I don't see them really picking up. I personally don't really use mobile payments that often, even though obviously I know everything I can about them. You know, I try to learn about them all the time, and yet in my day-to-day life, it's just, you know, I walk up to a terminal, and do I want to study it and figure out whether or not it accepts mobile? No, I just want to insert my card and just be done with it. And, you know, nor do I want to...
So debit card is still the card of choice.
A debit card? Are you dipping the card, like using an actual card?
Well, it could be a credit card too. That's true.
Yeah, sure. No, I think, and based on the statistics I read, my observations in the field, my personal usage, mobile is just not surpassing a certain point in the U.S. I just don't see the people in front of me at the cashier grabbing their phones. They're grabbing their wallets. That could change. And, you know, I've said now for a few years, I think 10 years from now, we'll look back and we'll say, well, of course, why didn't anyone realize that this platform was going to dominate eventually? But, you know, right now we don't know what platform that is. Is it Apple Pay? Is it Android Pay? You know, a few years ago, the retailers had this almost laughable system they thought everyone was going to use, kind of proprietary system that didn't even charge your credit card. They were hoping to avoid the merchant fees, and of course that currency was what it was called, and that failed quite spectacularly. My analysis is we don't know what will be the dominant form of payment 10 years from now, but I'm confident that 10 years from now it'll probably be mobile, and we'll probably think it was obvious to us back in the late teens of the 20th century. I was in Europe this summer, and it seemed like most of the cards there had RFID embedded in the physical plastic card, and that's how most people were interacting, and they were kind of surprised when I wanted to actually, you know, put my card in the reader or that I wasn't using my phone. So that seems possible.
What does that look like? I haven't seen that transaction method. What does that look like for the European consumer?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, they're using the same, you know, financial instrument, their credit cards, but there's a symbol, looks like kind of four semicircles, you know, kind of in a triangular shape, kind of like a speaker, and that's meant to denote the wireless signal. And that can be embedded in the cards. And ironically, many of my credit cards from 5-10 years ago used to have that, but I looked in my wallet and none of them have that now. It's a system that never quite caught on in the United States, and I think the card issuers just stopped adding it to their cards. But in Europe, that seems to have caught on, and my understanding is that's also the same RFID system that, you know, Android Pay and Apple Pay use, so you could do either one. I just, you know, put my card in the chip reader, and everything worked just the same way it did in the United States. But the Europeans all had those chips in bed, and they're all using that. So I wouldn't mind seeing a resurgence of chips in the U.S. It needs to be kind of prominently marked on the terminal. Otherwise, you know, you're left with that problem I described where I'm looking at a terminal and I can't quickly tell if it's compatible with Apple Pay, so I'm not going to get out my phone and play with it on the hopes that it is. I just want to throw my card in and get out of there once I get to the cashier.
Sure.
So, you know, in some ways, Europe has led the way, of course, with EMV, being in use for over 20 years in Europe and just a few years here in the U.S., you know, that could be the way Europe leads with RFID embedded cards or some other platform that might just be emerging now or not even created yet.
Okay, and we're talking with Jason Steele, who is a noted writer in the field of credit cards and payments and is going to be hosting a conference coming up September 25th, 26th in Orlando, Florida, and covering credit card from a media point of view. And Jason, maybe if we just go back and talk a little bit about travel cards, something at CVSI we've worked on for decades. What do you see being the success factors for a airline card or other type of travel card?
Yeah, well, you know, the undoubtable conclusion we have to reach this year based on a new card that was the Barclays Arrival Premier that was introduced without a sign-up bonus. And, you know, the undoubtable conclusion we have to reach is that there's a lot of credit card issuers who are focused on that sign-up bonus. And that short-term gain is just what makes them click apply. And there's no way around that. But in the long term, I think consumers are fairly savvy. They need value from their cards. And if that's travel statement credits, if that's waived bag fees, elite status in a hotel program, et cetera, they will calculate that value every year before they pay the annual fee, or they will call up and cancel their account. So, you know, card issuers ignore consumer savviness at their own peril. And, you know, part of it, the credit cards are not the focus of everyone's day, like mine, of course, but they will Google, you know, their credit cards that they're interested in applying for, and they will come up with articles written by people like myself who will go through that value equation and say, is this card worth it or not? And they will rely on those influencers, as the marketing people like to describe us, before making their decision. So, you know, when the Sapphire Reserve came out a couple years ago and all the influencers just fell in love with it and wrote wonderful things about it, well, you know, the results speak for itself. The sales were off the charts. They literally couldn't manufacture the cards fast enough to keep up with demand. And, you know, to this day, you know, when people hear I'm an expert in travel rewards, the Sapphire Reserve is usually the first card they mention. Either they have it or should they get it? Do they want it? It just captured the imagination in a way that I haven't seen with any other card in the last 10 years. So if I'm, you know, talking to someone, and I do this from time to time, if I'm talking to someone who designs these cards, I say, yeah, you know, this has got to be a card that you would apply for. There's got to be a card that your neighbor, your mom, your kids would apply for. It's got to offer real value. You can't just have, you know, fancy bells and whistles and great marketing and celebrities and all that. That'll only take you so far.
Absolutely. Now, talking with Jason Steele about the credit card industry, and one of the things that obviously has taken off is e-commerce, billing mm-hmm. to a credit card. You know, the sales are increasing, and we're getting closer to the fourth quarter shopping season. We're right in the middle of back to school. What do you see happening as far as credit card issuers being able to attract that online spend of their customers?
Yeah, well, you know, they're getting innovative. I see more and more targeted offers, you know, spend X number of dollars during this time period and you'll receive extra bonus cash back or points or miles. That's great. You know, a lot of them are, you know, they have shopping portals and things like that offer additional bonuses. You know, we do see a ramp up in offers both for the credit card issuers and the retailers as we get to the fourth quarter. You know, I see lots of offers from electronic stores, from office supply stores, especially around now, like back to school time. And, you know, while those might not be in direct cooperation with the card issuers, you know, if your credit card offers you additional rewards at, you know, an office supply store or a supermarket or whatever, you know, you're going to use that card to spend there. Or at least that's my strategy. So, yeah, the fourth quarter is no doubt represents an oversized amount of consumer spending. The card issuers know it. You know, we might see better sign-up bonuses, better promotional financing offers around the fourth quarter, and, of course, even afterwards for balance transfers. So, yeah, there's no doubt that card issuers, like the retailers, aggressively market their products in the fourth quarter, maybe more so than the rest of the year.
Very good. And one of the elements, you know, you kind of mentioned is business travel and business usage of credit cards for those who are self-employed, those who use mm-hmm. their personal card, let's say, for their business travel. What are some of the influencers, again, that cause a customer to pick out a particular card to use on a business trip? Or for their business supplies that they need for their home businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's two types of card users, business card users. One is the business card user who really wants to keep things simple from accounting purposes, which, of course, is the reason these cards exist. You know, I have a business card. It has my business name on it. Doesn't matter what I'm buying, if it's gas or supplies or telecommunications, I'm going to use that card, and that keeps my life simple. Then you have the really highly engaged credit card users, award travel enthusiasts, you know, people who see their method of payment as a way of essentially receiving a rebate on their business supplies, either in the form of cash back or value in terms of points and miles. And those people, and myself included, will use, you know, my Chase Inc. card at the office supply stores to get that 5 points per dollar, really important to me. You know, but maybe I'll use a different card for travel if it gives me a better bonus on travel. So maybe I will put business travel expenses on my Sapphire Reserve, and I'll just perform the extra work when it comes time to do the accounting of my business expenses. So probably the majority of people I talk to are fall in that first category of you know what, I'm just going to get one, maybe two business cards. I'm going to use that, and they'll pick out their business card largely the way they would pick out a personal card, features, benefits, maybe financing. But then they'll segregate their expenses the way it's kind of intended to be used. But I also know a lot of people like myself who just, hey, if I'm going to get a better reward from using my personal card for business expense or my business card for personal expense, I'll do that, and I'll, you know, sort out, you know, my accounting later. So those are the two kind of strategies I see.
Well, certainly today, with so many online merchants and providers of travel services wanting you to designate a credit card for purchases, you know, we've looked at some of the rideshare programs and helped our clients with means to make them confident to designate a particular credit card for any type of shopping. Could be rideshare, it could be events, sporting events, ticketing, or even subscription marketing. What are some of the elements that you see just encouraging a customer to embed a particular card into one of their purchasing programs?
Yeah, you know, that's that top of wallet is a phrase I hear a lot.
Sure.
You know, to get someone in that top of wallet position, it's pretty easy if they just use that single business card. But if they have multiple cards, you know, offering them value across the board in terms of like a lot of non-bonus spending, or offering value in what they're, you know, for example, when I run Facebook ads for my conference, I'll use my Inc. Business Preferred because I know it's offering me 3x points on that, and that's, you know, a big area of my spending. So yeah, targeting those business expenditures, I've seen a bit more innovation, like the Inc. Business Preferred targeting, you know, online advertising. You know, some of these business cards have categories that you can choose from that get the bonus. So yeah, I mean, again, offering value, I think hopefully the days of people just selecting a card by default without even thinking about it are over, and people are really, you know, tuned into to how many points per dollar, how much, what percentage of cash back they'll receive on a particular transaction. Yeah, just offering them that solid value, I think, is going to cause them to use that card for the most, you know, these electronic transactions where they just register the card once.
Sure. And talking with Jason Steele, noted writer covering the payments credit card industry. And Jason, one of the things that we have heard, the two big topics at a number of digital marketing meetings that we've been at in the New York area in the spring were artificial intelligence and digital transformation. It seemed like every conference was covering those two elements here for a variety of businesses, including banking. And first, maybe you could take a comment on what you see working as far as artificial intelligence applied to customer service. You know, we've had a lot of discussions about how much do you want the representative to handle for a customer and how much do you want to have the automated system do to take care of a customer's question. Any thoughts on what you see working in artificial intelligence applied to the business?
Sure. You know, I kind of remain pretty skeptical on artificial intelligence, and here's why. you know, I'll call up a credit card issuer and, you know, I'll get a machine that says, please enter your phone number. And forgetting the fact for a moment that shouldn't it have caller ID, you know, and match that up, that's not even artificial intelligence, that's just basic programming. But forgetting that for a moment, I enter my phone number in, maybe I enter my card number, you know, and then I get connected with a representative. The first thing they ask, oh, what's your phone number? What's your card number? So if we can't even translate that data and get that to the first person I speak with, you know, sometimes I feel like being a smarty pants and saying, yeah, it's the same number I just entered a moment ago, but I know it's not the representative's fault. You know, if they can't even get that right, they're reaching a bit too far in artificial intelligence. You know, I think the day might come, but, you know, most consumers, myself included, I talk to, they don't want to call a representative. That's what they do as a last case scenario when they can't get the information they're looking for online or on a mobile app. And so only when they do call do they get that. And to the extent that I do think that artificial intelligence could help, I would like my representatives that I speak to have a clear picture of my history and my relationship with the bank, so I don't have to repeat myself. They don't have to, you know, sit there and read through stuff. They don't have to ask me questions that are clearly, you know, inappropriate or whatever. That would be great. But, you know, until they can fix the basics, you know, let us do as much as possible online or on a mobile app that we can, you know, reduce a lot of the hassle of just calling in by reading our caller ID and, you know, knowing our account number by default, that kind of thing. Until we get to there, geez, I'd hate to hear about banks wasting lots of money on artificial intelligence, which is often just a buzzword, you know, to represent things that a computer scientist would not define as artificial intelligence. You know, if they're going too far ahead without fixing the basics first, that would be unfortunate.
Yeah, we've heard a couple of presentations about trying to predict customers' questions and as you said, being able to provide them that information as quickly as they can. But one of the things that numerous speakers said this year is the customer wants to know at the end of the situation that if their situation is not resolved, that they can find a human representative to talk to. And especially, I think, when you're talking about some of the higher net worth segments, and high-value loyalty customers, it's important. Do you feel like that's important that you can, that a customer always knows that they can reach a representative when they need to?
Absolutely. I mean, I my personal banking I do with a small bank that's out of state, and one of the reasons I've been using them for 15 years is that when I call them, I can hit one number and I'll get a representative, and boom, that's it. And you know, the only reason I would call them is because I can't accomplish something online. And so too often when I call major banks, they seem to be offering over the phone things that I could get online, and only after refusing that, you know, my balance or just kind of basic recitations of policies, only after refusing that can I talk to a human. And, you know, I'm feeling like, look, if I wanted this, I would have got this online. I would have logged in and checked my balance or redeemed my rewards or whatever. The only reason I'm calling is because I don't have that. So how quickly can I get to a human? And if they frustrate me, I don't want to do business with them again. I want to take my business elsewhere to an institution that values my time. And I think that's, I'm not sure I'd be classified as a high net worth individual, but even people of more modest means value their time very highly, sometimes even more so if they're working two jobs and have a family. You know, they might not have $1 million in the bank, but they're not going to tolerate having to go through several minutes of voice prompts because they had a problem with their online account that they couldn't resolve online.
Absolutely. And talking a little bit with Jason Steele today, noted writer in the credit card field. And Jason is the founder of a conference that's coming up in Orlando, Florida, for on credit cards and credit card media. And that's going to be at the Rosenshingle Creek Hotel in Orlando, Florida, September 25th to 26th. And Jason, I see that your keynote speaker is Clark Howard. Maybe tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, well, I mean, Clark Howard is just one of the guys in this field that I admire the most. He's a legend in the field of personal finance and consumer advocacy. You know, I can't say I have a special connection to him, but I did grow up in Atlanta where he is from, and he appears on television and radio for decades. And so I have kind of grown up watching him. And I, you know, also proud now I'm contributing to his site and working with him on his the credit card portion of his site. But, you know, he is just the most genuine voice out there. And, you know, working with him and his staff, you get a feel for how critically important it is for him to write about credit cards in the most consumer-centric way, in the most honest way, to really focus on the needs of the consumer and to be honest about the fact that, frankly, credit cards are not for everyone. So, you know, there are some personal finance people who are just oppose credit cards for everyone, and there's others who will seemingly advocate that everyone should be using credit cards. And Clark takes a more realistic approach to say, you know, credit cards are for people who pay their balance in full and avoid debt and make their payments on time. If you're just not one of those people, then perhaps you need a different form of payment. If you are one of those people, you should be using the best credit cards for your needs. And I just love that message. So he's going to be our keynote speaker at CardCon, leading things off, and I'm just thrilled to have him.
That's great. And I see you have Stephanie Harris from Centric doing a session, Partner Centric, and doing a session on credit card affiliate marketing for the influence era. What is that session going to discuss?
Well, yeah, I mean, she's going to talk about you know, the different trends we're seeing in the affiliate marketing segment. And, of course, if you write about credit cards for your own website, affiliate marketing is how you make a living. And if you do what I do, write about credit cards for someone else's website, it's essentially where, you know, how they make a living and indirectly how you're making a living. So it's a very important issue within this field, and people are coming to CardCon to hear about that. You know, we have a Stephen Harrell from Bankrate Credit Cards, now owned by Red Ventures, will be on that panel. Steve's a friend of mine, thrilled to have him. You know, we have a representative from Impact, which is one of the major affiliate marketing companies. And also sponsoring CardCon is Rakuten and CJ. So, you know, we have the three major players in this field going to be there. So if you are someone who has a website that hosts affiliate links or you contribute to one of these sites, this will be an area of really great interest to you if you're able to attend this event.
Okay, and just going into your second day, you have an interesting speaker. Obviously, the field is dealing with regulations and from various regulators in Washington, especially the CFPB. And you've got a speaker in the morning talking about that. Maybe you could describe some of the topics of that event.
Yeah, well,
that session.
Yeah, we have John Oldsheimer, and you know, John is again just an extremely well known expert on consumer credit, and you know, you see him on TV. He's you know, he's kind of everywhere, and so having him kind of address these latest regulations and what we as media need to know about them, to write about them, to relate to our readers, you know, it's a real key function of CardCon, which is, you know, focused on media and how we can best educate consumers, our readers, and write about it from a knowledgeable standpoint. And when it comes to credit, too often we see maybe perhaps more mainstream journalists getting it wrong. And we who are more focused on credit, you know, shake our heads and say, how could they miss this? This is not accurate. And yet it's appearing in this major outlet. So I think the people who come to CardCon get this kind of perspective that informs their writing and makes it more accurate and more illuminating to their audience.
And Jason, if you would just mention what is the website that listeners can get all the information about your conference September 25th and 26th in Orlando.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cardconexpo.com, and you know, if the listeners are familiar with FinCon, the Financial Bloggers Conference, you know, we're an official partner of FinCon. So CardCon is being held same hotel just the day and a half before FinCon starts. So if you're coming to FinCon and you're focused on credit and credit cards, you really need to come a couple days early and attend CardCon, and that's where you'll just be saturated in those areas rather than the breadth of personal finance.
Very good. Sounds like a terrific event. We'll recommend it to all of our audience. And just tell us, what are some of the people that you think would really value attending that?
Well, the core constituency is the media, people who write both for mainstream and for the online outlets, be that freelance media or people who are full-time employees. I mean, just some of the companies that will be represented there include, Credit Karma and Student Loan Hero, NerdWallet, CreditCards.com, Credit.com, all the major outlets that cover this field, Credit Sesame. But then lots of other smaller freelance writers who maybe either contribute to some of these outlets. Maybe they have, maybe you have your own blog that's where you write about issues about credit and credit cards. It's a perfect place to meet those people. And so because of that, we have the industry attending, card issuers, affiliate networks, Vantage Scores, our title sponsor. And so they'll have an exhibitor booth there, or they'll be hosting a lunch or a dinner or a break. And so it's a great opportunity to make those connections between media and industry that really both sides value. It's not one of those situations where, you're walking down an expo hall and everyone's saying, hey, come look at our products, and you're just like, I don't care. It's more like, hey, I'm going there to make these connections with the industry that I can use throughout the year. And the industry, of course, wants to make connections with the media. So it's a really vibrant interactions between, both the media, which might be about two-thirds of the attendees, and the industry, which might be about a third.
Well, that's terrific, and that sounds like a great event down in Orlando, September 25th and 26th. And Jason, if you would, maybe just mention some of the topics that you're looking forward to writing about and researching as we go into the fall.
Yeah, well, I'm putting together some really great articles for the Points Guy, one of which is about, which hotel programs have policies that allow blackout dates and which ones do not. And that directly affects credit card users who are, earning these points and wanting to spend them and sometimes finding that they can't. I just drafted an article yesterday that should be coming out soon about the no-fee airline cards. There are credit card users, and I'm sure we know them, who just refuse to pay an annual fee on principle. You can offer them unlimited value for a modest annual fee, and they'll say, nope, forget it, I'm not paying that. So thankfully there are several options there. Some of them make sense in some situations, and some of them frankly don't. And so I'll kind of go over that kind of thing. I have a column in Smarter Travel where I talk about different travel cards that are best for different uses for business travel or for hotels or for airlines. And that comes out every week. So really I try to stay on top of everything credit card related. The industry changes enough that it never gets old, meaning there's always new cards, there's always changes, there's always something to write about. So that's, lucky for me.
Well, Jason Steele, we really appreciate being able to talk with you today on Talking Business. And I know your Twitter is at RealJasonSteele, STEELE, and you're up on LinkedIn. Big audiences on both, and in many of the publications and blogs that follow the credit card industry. Thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to meeting you and hearing you in person in the near future.
Thanks, Ken. I hope you can make it to CardCon.
We'll make every effort, and that sounds like a great event. And I just want to thank Jason Steele for joining us today. And again, we're broadcasting from the headquarters of CBSI Services in Harrison, New York. Founded in 1972, CBSI provides a full range of special benefits to the consumer financial services field. Every day, CBSI programs provide warranty, airline coverage, and many services to millions of credit card customers in the United States and overseas. So for Talking Business by CBSI, this is Ken Kreitzer.